the unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I was thinking what it was like to come to an introductory retreat a long time ago, and some of you might, or a lot of us have been to an introductory retreat, and there are some who have come for the very first time. And I thought this would be worthy of talking about it in the Dharma talk, for everybody's sake, mine included. I hope you have found it helpful, those of you who are here, excuse me, for the first time, and that perhaps you've heard some ideas that were inspiring, resonated with you, something that you may be interested in practicing or testing out. And that's our hope, that's our offering from the monks here. We hope that you find something that you can be inspired by, and try and put it into practice. That's the key. It's well enough to be listen to somebody or read something in a book, but then to integrate it into your life is a whole other thing. And that's what I'm going to be talking about in a little bit. I have found, and I think most of us who have practiced for a while, that our Buddhist practice offers us an opportunity to think and do things in ways that, when practiced, can help us with our suffering of ourselves and others. And what's my train of thought here? And so that's the hope that we offer to all of you, and that is what we put into practice ourselves, is that we hope for ourselves that we can find our way, that we can find and discover something possibly in a new way. Because what Buddhism does ask us is to do something in a different way than we're used to, because if we were doing things in the way we were used to, we probably wouldn't be doing anything other than what we're doing right now, which for a lot of people connects with suffering. You know, problems, frustration, and this is a new opportunity here to look at things in a different way. Same stuff, different view. And one of the examples of this, of our community, really, is that River Master Jiu, when she was getting ready to sail east from England to the east, she had searched for something worthwhile in her life but did not find what she was looking for. Okay, so she boarded a ship and made her way to the east, not knowing what she would find, which is a very bold move. She was by herself and probably didn't have first class. You know, we don't know the details of that journey, I don't think. But it was a long journey, and she arrived in Malaysia. And what she says in the first part of her journal, in part, headed in the direction of getting on the boat and going to Malaysia, and then onward with the journal taking place in Japan. She says we're all searching for something when we come here, or when we went through the introductory retreat. But she says that we were searching for something that we have perhaps lost. That's a different thing than just searching for something that we've never had. It's something that we've lost and can find. What she had when she went to Malaysia was the heart or mind that seeks the way, or the beginner's mind, which is an openness and a willingness to try something new that she hadn't done before. In our monk ordination, we have a verse that I love, and it says, "The merit of the first mind is the widest and most completely fathomless. Even if Buddhas explain it fully, such explanation can never be enough." So this is a remarkable thing, that you who have come for an introductory retreat, those of us who came for an introductory retreat, have at moments where we are faced with new views, and without, you know, it's easy enough to turn away from them, be distracted by not wanting to do them, whatever. And if something happens where you say, I wonder, what's going on here? That is the beginning of a turning around with an open and willing mind, the first mind, beginner's mind. An opposite of that, or an example, is the expert's mind. And this is something I think we're all, we not pant after, but we try to aspire to be experts in a lot of different fields. And we can be kind of stuck on that idea because we think that being an expert is going to give us what we need, which it does a little bit, but not enough. And Shunryu Suzuki says about the expert's mind, he says, with the first mind, which I was talking about, the open beginner's mind, there are many possibilities, right? Because you're open without a lot of thoughts and things that are kind of clouding the view. But with the expert's mind, the possibilities of an expert are few, because they know everything. I mean, you know, experts, that's what an expert is, right? Not about everything, but they know a lot more than maybe other people. And so he goes on to say, Shunryu Suzuki goes on to say, if you discriminate with the expert's mind, you limit yourself. If you are too demanding and greedy, your mind is not rich and self-sufficient. When your mind becomes demanding, when you long for something, you will end up violating your own precepts or ethical values and lose your beginner's mind, that mind which is open and willing to learn. You say, well, why do you want to be open and willing to learn something new? Well, that's a good question. Here's a story. This is one from Reverend Master Jiyu's master, Kato Chisan, who was an abbot in Sojiji in Japan. And that's where Reverend Master trained as a Buddhist monk for a number of years. And in his biography that I found, Kato Chisan was a Japanese man, okay? He was really short, like under 5 feet. So he was short even for a Japanese. And he also happened to be really round. And so he had a nickname called Pumpkin, which he didn't like. People used it a lot. They called him Pumpkin, and it really irritated him. And he felt like he was being pushed around and labeled as a pumpkin. And he didn't feel like he was, he couldn't find a skillful way to not react in a way that wasn't defensive, that he didn't want to be a pumpkin, you know, fair enough, not in that way. So reading on in his biography, he's the one that helped me see that the way that we can turn our views around in difficult situations like he was in is to stop, look, and listen. Simple. We all know how to do that. Stop, look, and listen. And through that process of doing it enough, he began to see that he did not need to react to the situation of being a bully, because they called him a pumpkin, to, you know, in the way that he had before. But perhaps there was a different way, because he was really, really tired of being a reactive, a mean and nasty pumpkin. He didn't really, whatever that might mean, but anyway. So he set out to stop, look, and listen, and understood that he didn't. It didn't really help him to react in the way that he was coming across. Okay, and it really he was suffering a lot for it. And through that process of stopping, looking, and listening, he understood that he really didn't have to do that anymore. In a clear enough way that he could stop in the middle of somebody calling him in a derogatory way, "You little pumpkin," you know. He said he could stand his ground, not necessarily knowing what to do, but he did not have to engage in that that dialogue so much anymore, because he didn't believe it. There was some little seed that got planted in him where he knew that perhaps, not knowing what that meant, there was something more to him than this view that had been cultivated by, you know, people calling him a pumpkin. And he said in his book, or the biography I read, that was one of the greatest joys that he had in his practice, was he actually could break through that. And he didn't really care if people called him pumpkin or not. It didn't matter so much anymore. It was their problem. And I want to just read this quote again because I love it so much. The merit of the first mind is the widest and most completely fathomless. Even if Buddhas explain it fully, such explanation can never be enough. We don't know what happened there. Something did, obviously. Now, let's see. I'm going to follow my own mind here. And now I'm going to tell you my story. For the first time I came here to Shasta Abbey for an introductory retreat. I was thinking about this, and I had never been to a temple or to a retreat center, but decided it was time to try it out. And I wasn't sure about going or what I was going to see or even if I wanted to do it. So I brought a friend along with me. So I committed myself to doing it. But I felt like I was stepping into an unknown, and I did not obviously know what that meant. It was unknown. But I came here, went through the retreat without any problem. You know, it was the same amount of time, Friday afternoon through Sunday afternoon, that you all have gone through. But something happened. Afterwards, I realized something about the Buddhist teachings I had heard that week and resonated with me. It affected me very deeply, and I didn't even know it until I was away from the Abbey, and I thought, I wonder what happened. It was like an unknown. It continued to be unknown, but it was like my heartstrings were were strung or something, you know, and vroom, like that, you know. Something happened. And over the years, I thought, well, okay, now what do I do? I had no idea what to do with it. Being a monk was not kind of even sort of in my experience, my life, what it was. I had no idea. But something had happened, and I just put it on the back burner, as we would say. But I did finally listen to that, and I was wondering that what to do with it. So then I went back and forth about becoming a monk or not becoming a monk, and I just finally said, well, you got to try it and see if it's for you, because if you don't, you'll regret not trying it. So I did. In other words, my heart was pointing in the direction of seeking the way, but I didn't know that. And after 43 years, I can say it was pointing me in a good way, and here I am to talk about it. Yeah. So that's my story, and I just thought about it, and it was interesting. I went to different retreat centers just to see what other people were doing. There weren't a lot in that time, but I just looked around, and I kept thinking it was a very clear thing. I felt like this was my first love, you know, and I can't even tell you what anything more than that. But that's what the words that came to me, and I thought, well, that's that's worth paying attention to, especially if I can come back to it, which I did. Well, let's see here. Where am I going? One thing that crosses my mind is you've come here, you hear good ideas, or you get inspired by things, Buddhist things that can help you perhaps in your life. And I find that a way to take the next step, stop, look, and listen, is to say yes. So often we can come to situations with all of our agendas and opinions and ideas, which are, you know, we've been doing that. We know how to do that very well. But what about just simply saying, yes, I need to get to work, I'm late. Yes. Not make a big deal out of it, but just kind of do the deed. Or I think somebody said here, we were talking in the kitchen, one robe, one bowl. Well, what happens if you get wax on your bowl or whatever the situation is? Well, you don't go to the closet and get a new one. You make do with what you got. You've got one robe, and that's what you have to work with. And somehow things do work out with that one robe. But saying yes to it opens our hearts, and we can see that perhaps we don't have to carry the baggage with us, but we can also just take the next step. And it can be a very simple, mundane step. It can be heading towards the where your keys are to get into the car, but taking a slow step, quietly, instead of rushing. You know, there's all kinds of opportunities for us to kind of change our ways of doing things. And that yes can also be no. It can be no is a good yes. Does that make, you know what I'm saying? So you learn a skill of how to do things like say no, but your heart, you're still saying yes. You know, you learn how to cultivate these things, and it takes time to learn how to say yes, because the truth of that is that when you say yes, that's what your heart wants to do. You want to be open. We do want to say yes to things. Because saying no is, in a certain kind of way, it is just shutting down. We're not kind of opening up to our own true selves, much less those of others. It takes time to recognize this and to understand it and to want to do it. But it's doable. It's something that we practice here. Let's see here. And here's another example of the beginner's mind that is kind of posing a... where am I going with this? A situation. And this comes from, again, Shunryu Suzuki, Zen Mind's beginner's mind, where he talks about the beginner's mind and what can happen. So you all who have come here this weekend for the first time, we were all reciting the scripture of great wisdom for morning service. So it's the scripture that we do it every single day, pretty much. I'd say 99% of the time. And the first time we hear it, no doubt, we pay attention to the words and their meaning. And so our mind is open and willing. We've never heard it before, so we want to listen. What is this saying? What is it talking about? After repeated recitations, you will probably lose your original attitude towards it. You may lose the limitless meaning of your original attitude. At first, you may pay attention to the words to understand their meaning. Then, after a while, the scripture recitations start to lose their first mind impression, and our attention can change and sometimes become rather dull. Now, these scriptures were written, or so I have heard, on death's door. That wakes me up. They're written by monks who have had experience where they know that these scriptures are really important. Why do I want them to become dull? and not listen to him. I would like to wake up, that's one of the things, and listen to him every day, day in and day out. And that is the stopping, the looking, and the listening. And the rewards of that are that I think most of us can say we listen to the scriptures, and phrases and words just pop out every day, you know, almost, I would say, that have meaning, again, for that day. It's kind of like your way of getting your daily word, you know, that helps out. It helps inspire us to get through the day in a way that is more inspired by the Buddhist teachings. Stopping, looking, and listening, and trying to find that beginner's mind, which is the merit of that first mind is the widest and most completely fathomless. Even if Buddhas explain it fully, such explanation can never be enough. Right. Now, let's see here. So this is my offering of the gift of the Dharma. As the Dharma was offered to Reverend Master Jiyu and myself, now we're offering it to all of you as a gift. I hope you treat it well. I wish you well. Thank you.